Chapter 64. Jesse didn't usually associate the morgue with friendship, but that was about to change. He didn't think what he had to say should be said over the phone, nor did he think he should let it wait. And the truth was that he liked the arrangement he had with Tamara Elkin. It kind of reminded him of his relationship with Marcy, but that was a friendship with perks, and it had run its course years ago. Not that the perks hadn't been great. They had been. Marcy certainly seemed to enjoy their intimacy as much or more than he did. It was just that sometimes Jesse got the sense that there was an element of revenge in it for her, a kind of middle finger to her ex-husband and the men who'd done her wrong. Maybe there was an element of revenge in it for him, too. In any case, things had changed since then. He had changed. Tamara was just coming out of the autopsy room when he ran into her. At first, she smiled at him. Then the smile evaporated as she remembered what had happened between them the previous evening. "You didn't exactly catch me at my best," she said, gesturing at blood on her scrubs. "That's okay. About last night. I wanted to apologize." She waved her hand at him. "Don't. Please don't. I've got to get cleaned up. Why don't you go wait in my office for me? I'll be in as soon as I can. Here." She handed him a file. "You can save me the trip by putting that on my desk for me." "Rough one?" he asked, pointing at the autopsy room behind her. "Yes and no. An old woman with late-stage Alzheimer's. She fell at the care facility, so they needed an official COD. The autopsy was pretty routine, but these cases, I don't know. I've seen death in all its various forms, probably some that not even an ex-homicide detective has seen. And there's just something about Alzheimer's that scares the hell out of me." "Me, not so much," Jesse said. "You die of almost anything else, and at least you have something to hold on the way out. But with Alzheimer's, you're just lost and confused." He thought she might cry, and without thinking, reached out and stroked her cheek. She let him. "You don't know who you are coming into the world," he said. "Why worry about it as you leave it?" She smiled a weak smile at him. "I'll see you in my office in a few." Jesse sat in Tamara's office and did what people do alone in offices. He looked around, looked at the photos on her walls, the diplomas, the knickknacks on her desk. Funny, but Jesse often found a person's workplace as or more revealing than his or her bedroom. During homicide investigations, he had always made it a point of visiting the victim's and or the suspect's workplace. People who were meticulous and guarded at home could sometimes betray themselves at the office, at their desk, or in their school locker. He didn't expect to come to any great revelations about Tamara Elkin. She had come to him armed only with a bottle of Black Label and the truth. Jesse smiled at the photos of her in her track outfits, the shots of her leaning forward as she came across the finish line ahead of the other runners. He liked seeing her with the ribbons and medals around her neck. There was one photo of Tamara in high school, he guessed, holding a bouquet of roses and standing in between a man and a woman Jesse thought must be her parents. The pride on her parents' faces was remarkable to see. And for some reason, at that precise moment, he thought of Suit. Jesse laughed at himself. He decided he needed either to start drinking more heavily again or to begin seeing dicks as often as he could. "What's so funny?" Tamara asked, catching Jesse in the act. "Me," he pointed at the photo. "These your folks?" "That's them. Dad's a gastroenterologist, Mom's an English professor." "Any smart people in your family?" She laughed and then saddened. "They're both from New York and moved us down to Dallas when Dad went to work at Baylor University Medical Center. They were both so proud of me when I got that ME position back home in New York. Wasn't really my home. I was little when we moved." She sat behind her desk and Jesse sat across from her. "I know you don't want to hear this," he said, "but I'm sorry about last night. Jen and I, we can't ever seem to totally let go, even after we've let go." "Don't beat yourself up over it. I acted like a jealous little girl." He nodded. "What I said about us being friends, I meant it, every word. And so far, I think we're really good for each other. But that doesn't mean that when I'm with you that I don't want your full attention. No one wants to be treated like a disposable razor." "Okay, I hear you." "Good. He asked, "Are we allowed to go to dinner together? A date? Friends don't go on dates. They just go eat together and split the check." She smiled. He smiled back. "Where?" she said. "Not the Gull." She reached for a pen and a pad, wrote something down, and handed him the sheet of paper. "My place. Friends cook for each other sometimes, too. 8? He stood. "See you then." Chapter 65. John Milner had gotten out of the taxi 2 blocks away from the marina, paid the cabbie, and just like he'd been told, walked away from the harbor for a few blocks before doubling back. He thought all the James Bond stuff was a bunch of crap, and he was still confused about why them 2 houses had to get torched. The last thing on earth he wanted to do was to call attention to himself and what they had done all those years ago. He just didn't see the upside. Still, he had to admit that he liked sticking it to Jesse Stone and that jerk Luther Simpson. He enjoyed the hell out of it. But the way he figured it, they got away with what they'd done to them girls for 25 years. And that with Zevon out of the picture, all they had to do was wait it out. They all had bad moments before, when the guilt got really intense. But those moments passed. Sure, he felt sick about how that had come down. He always felt crappy about that. They all did. But he couldn't undo what they'd done. None of it. None of them could. It wasn't like in the street games he played as a kid in the swamp. No do-overs in murder, whether you meant it to happen or not. Nobody meant for them to get hurt like that. And Zevon? Well, screw him. He brought that trouble down on his own head. He as much as signed his own execution papers the minute he walked back into town. He had to know that, the stupid bastard. The marina was a ghost town this time of year, and it was creepier than a freaking cell block a few hours after the lights out. You just knew some bad stuff was going down in the dark, but no one dared cry out or call for help. That was the worst part of being inside, the dark. And Milner didn't like knowing there was water under his feet. He didn't like the slickness of the planks or the way they swayed to the will of the water. The thought of slipping off the dock and into the icy cold water scared the hell out of him. He couldn't swim worth a damn, and drowning scared him more than anything. Even now, he panicked at the thought of water rushing into his mouth, choking him, his lungs seizing up. He didn't want to die cold and alone. That was the worst part of what they did to the girls, leaving them in that cold, dirty hole all them years. At least they was together. He hoped this wasn't going to take long, because he had hated boats, always had. If he hadn't been so drunk that night, he wouldn't have gotten into that damn rowboat, and none of this stuff would be his worry. But he had gotten in that damn little rowboat. Ginny Connolly sitting next to him, taking big swigs of Southern Comfort and gagging, then taking some more in between tokes. Mary Kate sitting behind them, refusing the bottle, passing the joints every time they came her way, asking like a million times if Warren was going to be there. "You're sure he's going to meet us there? He's going to be there, right?" If that idiot Alicio hadn't stabbed her when things got crazy, Milner thought, he would have stabbed her himself, just to shut her the hell up about Zevon. Milner saw the Rainha dead ahead of him in the dark, its cabin lights lit. Of all the boats he hated, he had a special hatred for the Rainha, because it smelled like rancid old fish guts. He laughed to himself, thinking that most of the time, Alicio didn't smell too much better. He tried thinking back to high school when they played ball together. Did he stink so bad then? He couldn't remember. It was stupid to look back. That's all he did when he was inside, look back. There was some stuff he liked remembering, like about the other girls he'd been with, and about when they all played ball together. That's what Milner was thinking when he stepped up to the Rainha and a hand came out of the dark to help him aboard. "Where's Alicio?" he asked. "He's below, drunk as a skunk. You know how he gets. Looks like I'll be skippering our little excursion tonight." Milner shook his head. "Stupid Alicio and his drinking. You bring the gun?" "Yeah, here," Milner said, handing the revolver over. "I don't want no part of that thing no more." "I don't blame you. When we get out a little ways, we'll toss it and the knife into the water. Wash our hands of it all, finally." Milner liked the sound of that. "Good thinking. be rid of that stuff forever. What's Dragao drinking? I could maybe use something too. We all could. Do me a favor and untie her. Then go keep Alicio company below while I get us out of here. Milner shrugged. Whatever. But let's move it, huh? Then he carefully climbed back onto the dock, untied the Reina, and climbed even more carefully back aboard. When the Reina had moved several miles out of the harbor into the Atlantic, Alicio Dragao and John Milner felt the engines cut back. I gotta use the head, man, Milner said. Then we can get this stupid nonsense over with and I can get back on land. Dragao nodded, so drunk he could barely speak. While he steadied himself in the bathroom, Milner heard footsteps on the short staircase that led to the cabin. There was a brief moment of strange quiet. Then he heard Alicio slur, "What the fuck?" Less than a second later, the world flipped over. Two shots roared through the Reina's cabin, and something banged to the deck with a hollow thud. Milner zipped up, flung the door open, and stepped out of the head. He opened his mouth to ask what the hell was going on, but the only sound that came out of him was a gasp. He looked down, not understanding the jolt of pain in his guts, the likes of which he had never felt, nor the sudden weakness sucking the strength out of his limbs. And looking down, he saw Bill Marchand's hand pulling the knife out of his liver and shoving it back in again and again. Milner looked up at his old teammate and instantly understood that he and Alicio had been set up to take the fall for what the three of them had done. Milner tried to clamp his big hand around his old pal's throat and squeeze, but it was useless. Any strength left to him, his body was using to keep upright. Marchand laughed at him, swatting the maintenance man's hand away as if it was a mosquito. "I hear it really hurts getting stabbed in the liver," Marchand said. "I hope it does, you dumb son of a bitch. Before you got here, Alicio told me what you did to Zivon before you killed him. You shouldn't have beat him with a pipe that way, Johnny. You shouldn't have done that. He was the best friend I ever had." In his head, Milner's last words sounded like a scream. It came out a whisper. "Alicio." "Look behind you, moron. You shot him while he was stabbing you. That's how Jesse Stone will see it anyway. Really too bad the way that worked out for you guys. You shouldn't have turned on each other when you thought the cops were getting close. At least I'm almost out from under. Jesse's gonna find nearly everything he needs to tie up the case with a pretty red bow. Goodbye, Johnny." With that, Marchand stuck the knife into his old friend one last time and pushed Milner to the floor. But Milner wasn't dead. As Marchand went back up to bring the boat closer to shore, Milner crawled behind him. Marchand looked down at him from the top deck. "Good boy, Johnny. Keep coming. You always were a dumb bastard, but a stubborn one. Your blood on the stairs will make it look like even less of a setup. When I'm done with you and Alicio, there'll be just one last detail to take care of." Milner looked up at Marchand, shock taking control of him, his mind failing. He was gripped with fear like he had never felt before, not even after what had happened with the girls on Stiles Island that night. It wasn't fear of dying. He knew that was coming soon. It was the fear that Bill Marchand might throw his body overboard, or worse, throw him overboard while he still had some life in him. He couldn't let that happen, so he gave in to gravity, sliding back down the stairs, greased with his dark, almost black blood, and surrendered to the long overdue Bill waiting for him on the other side.